The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis with the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The following articles are from Black Enterprise Magazine. The first article is titled, Eric Adams Becomes the Second Black Man to be Elected New York City Mayor. Former NYPD Captain Eric Adams has become the second black man to be elected the mayor of New York City, easily defeating Republican Curtis Sliwa. Adams, who will take over for current Mayor Bill de Blasio January 1st, received 66% of the vote Tuesday to become the 110th mayor in the city's history. The former cop and center-left Democrat win signals a new leadership that Adams said will reflect the needs of working and middle-class residents of color who were vital to win this election. However, the former Brooklyn borough president has his work cut out for him. New York City is still dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic and unequal recovery, concerns about crime and gun violence, police reform, and an unequal education system. In addition, progressive Democrats made gains in the city council meeting. Adams will have to work with a group that sits much further left than he does. One positive for Adams is Governor Kathy Hochul, who replaced Andrew Cuomo after he resigned, attended Adams' victory party and wants to have a better relationship with Adams than Cuomo had with de Blasio. We are so divided right now, and we are missing the beauty of our diversity, Adams said, according to the New York Times. Today, we take off the intramural jersey, and we put on one jersey, Team New York. Sliwa conceded early Tuesday night, telling supporters in his own unique way that he isn't going anywhere. Understand this. Unlike a former president who said many, many years ago, you won't have me to kick around anymore. You will have Curtis Sliwa to kick around, the Republican mayoral nominee said, according to the New York Post. I proved to everyone that I could go into neighborhoods where the only Republican they ever saw was Abraham Lincoln on a $5 bill and be accepted, received, and given equal treatment, he continued. We have to carry this movement on. Adams is aware of the difficulties facing him and the city, saying during his victory speech, we are fighting COVID, crime, and economic devastation all at once. Adams will be the city's first black mayor since 1990 when the late David Dinkins was elected. The next article is titled, Alvin Bragg Becomes Manhattan's First Black Attorney General. Attorney Alvin Bragg became the first black man elected Manhattan's district attorney, easily defeating opponent and Republican candidate Thomas Kenneth. Bragg, a former assistant U.S. attorney with the Southern District of New York, knocked off Kenneth by a 70-point margin in the flagship borough of the city that never sleeps. The Harvard graduate will now take over the Trump investigation, which has already produced indictments of both the Trump Organization and Alan Wilsonberg. Bragg and Trump have history. In 2018, Bragg assisted in a lawsuit that led to the closure of Trump's charitable foundation over allegations he used the nonprofit for his political and business interests. The new district attorney was raised in Harlem and, according to ABC New York, had an NYPD officer threaten him with a gun and wrongly accuse him of being a drug dealer when he was 15. Bragg's parents pushed him to file a a complaint against the NYPD, which sparked his interest in the law and politics. He added that after opening his home to his brother-in-law after he was released from prison, the NYPD warrant squad routinely showed up looking for Bragg's brother-in-law and waking up his children. Those are my stories, but the important thing is that they are our stories, Bragg said. They are lots of people's stories, and I think taking those stories and metaphorically those people with me to the DA's office is important in a symbolic way, but also deeply meaningful in a very practical way. Bragg campaigned on promises to change the culture of the district attorney's office, including declining to pursue low-level offenses and small crimes of poverty, such as trespassing. The win marked several by people of color and women, including Michelle Wu, who became the first woman and person of color to be elected Boston mayor, receiving 63% of the vote. Wu, a Harvard Law graduate, a former protege of liberal Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, has served in the Boston City Council since 2014. Wu and the Boston City Council have called for a 10% cut in the city's police budget. Another politician and person of color to make history Tuesday was former Pennsylvania Representative Ed Gainey, who decided to run for Pittsburgh mayor after witnessing protests following the death of George Floyd last year. Gainey was the first candidate to defeat a sitting mayor in 90 years when he defeated Phil Peduto in the primary. He became Pittsburgh's first black mayor Tuesday, easily defeating Republican Tony Marino by receiving 70% of the vote. Other minority winners Tuesday included Eric Adams, who became New York City's second black mayor after David Dinkins was elected in 1990. Aftab Pervail became the first Asian American man elected mayor of Cincinnati last night. Pervail, who ran a platform of change at City Hall and Fresh Ideas, received 66% of the vote. The next article is titled, Former Residents of Black Georgia Neighborhood Seek Redress from UGA for Land Taken Through Eminent Domain. The former residents of a black neighborhood on the outskirts of the University of Georgia, UGA, whose land was taken through eminent domain, are seeking redress from the school. Linnentown was a black neighborhood until the 1960s, when the city of Athens, where UGA is located, claimed eminent domain, the right of a government to expropriate private property for public use, to purchase 22 acres using federal funds, and sold the property to the State Board of Regents. According to Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Linnentown residents were pushed out and the land was used for three dormitories on UGA's campus. They wanted to expand for parking lots and dorms on the backs of black families, and blacks couldn't even get into UGA, Thomas Whitehead, the president and community outreach coordinator for the Linnentown Project, told AJC. Eminent domain has been widely used across the country to take land for urban renewal during the 1960s and is one of the contributing factors to black and minority home ownership rates being so low in the U.S. today. Examples of eminent domain used to gobble up minority communities include Chavez Ravine, where the L.A. Dodgers play, and Bruce's Beach in California, which was recently returned to its owners. A group of six former Linnentown residents started the project and scored a small victory in February when the Athens-Clark County Commission unanimously supported a sweeping resolution calling the situation an act of institutionalized white racism and terrorism, and establishing the Linnentown Justice and Memory Committee, which is working on a Black History Center. The commission has also pushed through a plan for Athens-Clark County employees to receive a $15 minimum wage. Athens-Clark County Mayor Kelly Gertz apologized for Lennontown's destruction and said the resolution represents a commitment to creating better lives for Black Athenians. According to Whitehead, around 40 Black families lived in Lennontown, and the majority of its Black residents owned their homes. While Whitehead believes the measures taken are a positive first step, others say it's not enough. State law prohibits monetary reparations to former Lennontown residents using state or local money. But the Lennontown Project is now putting pressure on state legislatures to change the law. The project has written letters to both Georgia Senators Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff asking for assistance. Since the resolution in February, the former Lennontown residents have been waiting for more but have only heard silence from UGA, as school officials have ignored requests to meet with the group. The AJC reports UGA officials told them questions about the land seizure should be directed towards Athens-Clark County, which initially purchased the property, and the State Board of Regents, which still owns the property. The next article is titled, "The University of Cambridge Returned Looted Artifact to Nigeria, Leading to Calls for the British Museum to Return Its Artifacts." Britain is once again facing its imperialist history as a university held a ceremony to mark the return of ancient artifacts the UK looted from Nigeria. Last week, Jesus College at the University of Cambridge held a ceremony acknowledging the official return of a bronze statue of a rooster that was stolen during 1897. British invasion of Benin City. The invasion occurred when a British force of 12,000 troops under Sir Harry Rawson captured and destroyed Benin City and its royal palace, which was eventually absorbed into Nigeria. The statue was donated to the university in 1905 by the father of a student. "This is an historic moment," Sunita Allen, master of Jesus College, said in a statement. "We look forward to welcoming representatives from Nigeria and Benin to the handover ceremony and to celebrating the return of this bronze." The move comes as other countries have put increasing pressure on academic and cultural institutions in Britain and other countries to return stolen artifacts. The British Museum alone has more than 900 Benin bronze artifacts. The museum is home to a bevy of stolen artifacts from other parts of the world, including the Parthenon sculptures, a collection of marble architectural decoration from the Acropolis in Athens, Greece. The museum doesn't appear to have the same stance as Cambridge, telling CNN in a statement that it understands and recognizes the significance of the issues surrounding the return of objects and remains committed to share our collection as widely as possible. The British government believes the museum is the right place for the artifacts because it allows the most people to see them and, as one of the world's leading museums, has the facilities necessary for the artifacts' upkeep. However, others feel the British government's belief that stolen artifacts are best served where they are today is the exact type of thinking that led Britain to steal another country's most prized cultural artifacts. This logic suggests that Nigeria is a poorer country that is incapable of properly looking after the artifacts that colonists stole, despite the fact that there is a state-of-the-art museum awaiting them in Nigeria. It is a classic racist argument that Britain is a place of refinement and knows best. Andrews, professor of Black Studies at Birmingham City University, told CNN. France and Germany have also taken measures to repatriate stolen artifacts from Africa. The next article is titled, Iowa Approves Jobless Benefits for People Who Were Fired for Being Unvaccinated. Under a bill, Iowa legislators approved Thursday, state employees can seek religious and medical exemptions from COVID-19 vaccine mandates, and those fired for refusing the vaccine would be guaranteed unemployment benefits. NPR reports Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has called for legislative action concerning vaccine mandates as she opposed mask mandates and vaccines, although more than 7,000 residents have died from COVID-19. Reynolds announced she intends to sign the bill, calling it a major step forward in protecting Iowans' freedoms and their abilities to make healthcare decisions based on what's best for themselves and their families. More than 100 people rallied at the state capitol to push for stronger language and protections for those who remain unvaccinated. However, lobbyists for the business community said the way the bill is currently drafted puts business owners in conflict between complying with federal directives or state law. It is a terrible position for businesses to be put in, and it doesn't solve the problem you are trying to solve. J.D. Davis, the Vice President of Public Policy for the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, said during public comments in a committee hearing on the bill. Additionally, Iowa businesses are concerned about increased unemployment costs if thousands of workers become eligible due to refusing the vaccine and getting fired for it. Representative Bobby Kaufman defended the bill, saying it would help people in his district. Ironically, Reynolds cut the $300 weekly benefit in June, saying the benefit was stopping people from going back to work. Federal pandemic-related unemployment benefit programs initially provided displaced Iowans with crucial assistance when the pandemic began, Reynolds said in a statement. But now that our businesses and schools have reopened, these payments are discouraging people from returning to work. The end of the benefit did little to influence residents to return to work. The Iowa unemployment rate currently sits at 4%. Before the pandemic, the unemployment rate was 2.9%, according to Business Insider. The next article is titled, Biden Administration is Building Bridges with the Divine Nine. In a bid to enact voting rights legislation and police reform, President Joe Biden has tapped the Divine Nine, historically Black fraternities and sororities, and their alumni. The Divine Nine is largely considered the most powerful organization in the Black community, sporting 2.5 million members. The organization also including some of the most prominent Black men and women in government today. Vice President Kamala Harris, HUD Secretary Marsha Fudge, House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn, White House Senior Advisor Cedric Richmond are all in a fraternity or sorority of the Divine Nine. The Biden administration is trying to strengthen its relationship with the group as it tries to fulfill promises made by Biden. Black Americans are becoming increasingly frustrated with Biden's inability to come through on voting rights legislation, police reform, and student loan cancellation. We have been at this for quite a while and have had people in so many seats on those political tables for years, and we now know that makes a huge difference in terms of making sure that your voice is significant in terms of what it could do. Beverly Smith, current national president of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, told Politico. So it is the start of discussion with this administration, but it is work the Divine Nine has been doing since its inception. The Biden administration views the Divine Nine as an effective and willing messenger to pass information to and from their own members, as well as the Black community at large. Vice President Harris hosted an in-person meeting with the Council of Presidents of the nine sororities and fraternities earlier this month. It marked the first time all nine organizations have been invited to the White House to meet with a president or vice president, according to a White House official. Such a meeting didn't happen even during the Obama administration. Additionally, the Divine Nine will have a monthly meeting with Richmond just for the Divine Nine. The group already has a weekly Black stakeholders meeting with the White House Office of Public Engagement. The outreach by the administration comes as many have lost patience with the Biden administration's playbook of executive orders and speeches to no one and are demanding a more effective and forceful approach. The next article is titled, Claudette Colvin Comes Months Before Rosa Parks. Now she wants her record expunged. Several months before Rosa Parks became one of the faces of the modern civil rights movement, Claudette Colvin refused to move to the back of a segregated bus in Alabama. Colvin, who was 15 at the time, was convicted of assaulting a police officer and placed on probation. However, she has never received notice that her term was finished. Now 82, Colvin is asking a Montgomery court to expunge and erase her record, which her lawyer said has cast a shadow over the life of an unsung civil rights figure. I am an old woman now. Having my records expunged will mean something to my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and it will mean something for other Black children, Colvin said in a sworn statement, according to NBC News. Colvin's attorney, Philip Insler, said Colvin's statement will be filed Tuesday, along with legal documents to seal, destroy, and erase her record. Colvin eventually left the South, spending decades living and working in New York. But her relatives often worried what would happen if she returned to Alabama, because she never received the notification her probation was finished. The octogenarian, who is currently living in Birmingham, will have to make her request to a juvenile court since she was a minor at the time of her arrest. At the time, everything in Alabama, including its bus system, water fountains, and public restrooms, were divided along racial lines. On December 1, 1955, a seamstress named Rosa Parks refused to move to the back of the bus she was sitting on for a white man. Her arrest was the opening salvo that led to the year-long Montgomery bus boycott and pushed Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. into the national spotlight. However, 8 months earlier, a bus driver in Alabama called local police to report two Black girls were sitting near two white girls and refused to move to the back of the bus. One of the girls moved when asked, but the other, Colvin, refused. The police report stated Colvin put up a fight while being arrested, kicking and scratching an officer. She was initially convicted of violating the city's segregation law, disorderly conduct, and assaulting an officer, but only the assault charge stuck when she appealed. The case then went to juvenile court due to Colvin's age, where a judge found her delinquent and she was placed on probation as a ward of the state pending good behavior. According to Insler, that's where the case ended, and Colvin never received word her probation was completed. Ansler added, it's unclear whether Colvin is still on probation, but she hasn't been arrested or had a legal issue since. The next article is titled, University of Maryland Medical System Drops Race-Based Testing of Kidney Disease in Black Patients. When Uchenna Ndub Ise first noticed the African-American notation on a diagnostic test on her kidneys, she was shocked. She wondered what her race had to do with the lupus she had. Race-based algorithms and medical testing have been used for decades to diagnose and determine treatment plan issues such as kidney and lung disease, dementia, and other issues. That has led to researchers studying racial disparities in healthcare and are now exploring how and when race is used in diagnostic and medical testing. Some organizations have recently apologized for the practice, including the NFL and the American Psychological Association. Now the University of Maryland Medical abandoned the practice of race-based diagnostics medical testing to estimate kidney function. Medical advocates believe the practice is a factor in Black patients qualifying for transplants later than they should. Ndubuisi told the Washington Post she wasn't surprised by the situation. It's being Black in America, a Prince George's County resident told the Post. Another reminder that there's hurdles into healthcare for African Americans in this country. According to researchers at the American Journal of Kidney Diseases, more than 700,000 Black Americans could be treated for kidney disease earlier if race were removed from calculations of kidney function. The decision by both the university and medical system follows a recommendation made in September by a task force put together by the National Kidney Foundation and the American Society of Nephrology to discontinue race-based testing and diagnosing kidney disease. The panel recommended that not just the university and its medical system abandon the practice, but all laboratories and healthcare systems in the U.S. The current test relies on a patient's level of creatinine in the blood. The test also factors a person's age, gender, and whether the person is African American or non-African American. Other medical systems that have made the same decision include the University of Washington, Mass General Brigham, and the University of Pennsylvania. The next article is titled, Black Business Owners of Big Red's Hot Sauce Makes Forbes Next 1000 List. Paul Ford and his wife, Tassia, the owners of Big Red's Hot Sauce, have always been known for bringing the full flavor of hot sauces with the heat you love. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.